I hereby introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Starting a business on your own can be lonely and worrying. Selling online multiplies this issue tenfold. Getting expert help is a great way to reduce anxiety, wasted time, and confusion. The Amazing FBA Mentoring Program is in its fourth year of helping sellers to get started on Amazon. By now, we have former clients who have, starting from scratch, done six figures and even in one case, seven figures a year. Obviously, these are not typical results. These are exceptional people. Nevertheless, we can help you get launched faster, safer, and with a much higher chance overall of success. With clients from Melbourne, Australia to Manchester, England, we bring a genuinely international perspective. To find out more, go to amazingfba.com/mentoring. Thanks for listening. Ladles and jelly spoons, boys and girls, welcome back to Amazing FBA. This is your host, Michael Veazey. I'm here with John Tilley of AzonGuru.com. John is the CEO and co-founder, along with Adam Hudson, of A Reliable Education, of AzonGuru, which is an all-in-one software tool set to help Amazon sellers scale their business. So that's the formal introduction done. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Michael. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to share a few things with your listeners.
Yeah, and for those who are watching the video, you can see there's a nice ZG or ZG in the background, just in case we didn't spot who you work for. And also, what's the background? I can see a lovely sunny background there. What's behind you in the window?
Yeah, this is our headquarters in Los Angeles. And out that back window is the Hollywood Hills, and there's a little bit of Hollywood and Scientology museums and everything else that Hollywood has to offer.
Excellent. Yeah, I like the Scientology Museum. By the way, this is not product placement, guys. We're not trying to advertise Scientology subconsciously to you if you're watching the video, but welcome to the show. So obviously, AzonGuru is a very well-used and well-regarded app for a lot of things. We're going to plunge into tactics for product or market research. Always a perennial question, like what should I sell question. So the first problem I'd like to get into is talking about using keywords and data to choose product niches, because that is obviously, it's the way everyone does it, but it's also got some issues around it. So tell me about your approach to that.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic, I think. And I would say, as a private label seller, and that's specifically our type of audience, there are really two factors in finding a product niche and validating a product. And that's really data, which I think is 50% of the problem, right? And it's 50% of the solution. And then the other half is really that more creative skill around differentiation. So it's absolutely necessary to first use data to help you validate the product idea. And then obviously think about how you can differentiate that and connect with customers after that. So I think the data point, when I say 50-50, I think the data point is becoming more and more important, especially with how Amazon is growing as a complex industry. If you look at the platform going into 2020 with how it was 5 years ago when I started selling on Amazon, it's massively changed, with paid search being so much bigger and just really the algorithms around how to rank your product getting more and more sophisticated. So really understanding data from a keyword perspective is massively important. And I think that the key areas that we look at, one is exact search volume, right? And search volume from customers. So with our partnership with Amazon, we get access to exact search volume. And I think that is really important, because as a private label seller, you don't want to be launching a brand new product idea that no one knows about. People are going to Amazon to actually buy a product. So if you can understand the level of demand, which is indicated by exact search volume, I think that's one of the key metrics. We have another metric which is really important, which is actual dollars from keywords. So we've been able to get access to and provide a number around the actual dollars that the keywords that actual keyword produces for the top 25 sellers. So if you're looking at page one, which is where you want to be, yes, understanding what is the monthly revenue from that keyword, I think is incredibly important when finding a product.
That's actually quite a unique bit of data, actually, I have to say, just to step in there. Sorry to interrupt, sure. But I just think the exact dollar value of the keywords is really important, because I remember that's one of the first things I started selling on Amazon myself
it's pretty much, what are we in 2019, so 5 years ago as well, actually, and pretty much the day almost, five years. And one of the first questions I got from my very first consulting client about a year later was, well, so how do I figure out the exact value of these keyword search volume? And I didn't really have an answer for that. So how does that work? Because that sounds like very valuable data if it's accurate.
Yeah. And especially just to kind of go further with that point, I think dollars from keywords is really important, because especially when launching a product going into 2020, understanding what keywords you want to target for your launch. You can imagine the buyer keyword that you type in, there's many, many thousands of variations. So understanding what are the most competitive ones, as well as which ones produce the most amount of revenue, and using that in terms of a strategy around which keywords you're going to focus on around your launch, which are less competitive with obviously a high demand and a high revenue. That's a really critical point. So, that's something we've spent a lot of time figuring out, and a lot of that's attributed to essentially, we have a team that sell on Amazon as well as develop and develop our tool. And, they've been able to figure that out. And it's a combination of our verified relationship with Amazon and exact search volume and a bunch of those, but also market share and revenue share for the sellers on page one, and then be able to reverse engineer that and then test it against the algorithm. So it's not accurate to the exact T, but it's accurate and tested within a specific, very, very small range. So it's a guideline for sure, but it's accurate based on our testing.
Excellent.
And an important point. Yeah.
So how would that work in practice? If I'm coming into the space fairly new to the Amazon selling space, and I say, okay, so I want to sell, just think of back braces, everyone's selling that. Let's say if I look at the word back brace on, it's become the garlic press, by the way, don't sell this.
I haven't heard of that one. That's a good one.
If you're not aware, it seems to become, because I spoke to somebody the other day who's a specialist, Daisy Pollard, who's a specialist in model photography. And she said, yeah, she's got a stack of them in her office from people, and she said they all look the same. So don't sell this at home, folks. But let's say I want back brace for men, back brace for women, posture corrector. Those are the sorts of keywords that go around that. For example, how would you start with those keywords, and then what do I do next to get that
job? Sure. Good question. I think, for example, back brace for men, let's say, when I look at the data, and the specific tool that we have for this is called Keywords on Fire, because it's fire. It's amazing. We call it Keywords on Fire. Essentially what the tool does, just at a very high level, is we get specific keywords from what people are typing into Amazon that's pulled to us. And then we do a reverse lookup across the top 25 competitors for whatever search term you're looking at. And then we dedupe the data and we present it in a way with these various metrics. For example, you might see back brace for men doing, let's say, amongst the top 25 sellers, they're doing 320,000 a month, right? And then the posture corrector, looking specifically at that term, it's doing, let's say, 220,000 a month, right? So there's definitely a difference in terms of the demand and the search volume and the actual dollars earned from the keyword. But then what's important to look at is, okay, well, what's the actual competitiveness of back brace for men versus posture corrector? The average reviews, and importantly, the revenue share amongst the top competitors for that keyword. And for example, you might see on back brace for men that actually the revenue share amongst the top three sellers is 12%, whereas posture corrector is, 50%. And the average reviews for each of those is probably high on the back brace for men. So, when you look at those numbers altogether, you can then decide, okay, or potentially maybe even though the revenue by posture corrector is lower, it might be less competitive and the revenue share amongst the top sellers is less. So that's probably something that I would target and go after more than the other one. So it helps you to, one, understand at a high level, what products are selling and what is something that is worthwhile and I should put my interest into. But secondarily, when I start to look at that in more depth, what are the keywords that I should actually be targeting and focusing on as a strategy around launch and everything else? So those are some really key metrics.
Okay. I guess what you mentioned there is market share, or it's sort of, market share rather than by there's always the definition of define market before you can give market share, right?
I would say page one is market. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. But how, I mean, there's always that question, which is the $64,000 question of, okay, there's a word back brace, there's a word back brace for men, there's a word posture corrector. Posture corrector might involve something different, although it seems from practice that they quite similar looking products come up. But how would you define a niche market? Because one, we have to kind of define the edges of a market in order to say that a competitor has X amount of X percentage of market share, right? And I agree with you that the market share of your competition is a really critical metric, which a lot of people ignore. I'm really glad you brought that up. But how will you define a market?
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into that. And we have a specific metric called the niche score. And it's kind of broken down into four parts, one being a demand, one being the competition opportunity, one being the relative investment that you need to put into launching that product. And then the final one is the amount of net profit that you would be able to make from that product. So price and stuff. And I think there's, you know, a good on 20 metrics that go into those three things. We call it the rainbow niche score because we actually break down those four metrics. And that to us is really important to look at in the context of page one. I think the strategy for private label especially is to go into a niche category, so a niche within a niche that it has got less competition, but the objective is always to rank on page one. So even within those niche categories, you need to rank on page one. So looking at all of the competitors on page one, what is the relative competition opportunity? What is the relative demand? You know, how much do I need to really invest to be able to launch and get onto page one in terms of stock and velocity? And then finally, you know, what are those price points and how much net margin can I make? Because it's always about the leftover at the end of the day, like how much money would I actually be able to make? So that's how we look at it. And I know that's not a very simple answer, but this is, you know, I can't imagine today trying to really validate a product opportunity without looking at those kind of data metrics because it's incredibly important. Today, you know, you're investing as a seller, you're investing the next, you know, in terms of time, the next 6 months to a year, just really launching a product. So you've got to get it absolutely right, you know?
Yeah. I like the fact that you've covered those areas of demand, competition, relative investment to launch, which is, again, something people often ignore. If you've got a score on certain other, Chrome extensions, they will give it a score out of 10 or out of 100 or whatever. And I think, well, that's entirely relative to whether you've got the money to go into that market or not. So I'm glad you brought that up because a lot of markets might look attractive on the surface of it. But if you've got a market where you need $100,000 to go into it, which is often the case with a lot of bigger markets in America, that's actually not that big. But a lot of people start with a few thousand dollars in their back pocket. There's clearly a mismatch. So I'm glad you brought that up because my experience is that people just completely ignore that, I guess, because they're not trained in it, right? So and it's not flagged up by a trainer or by a tool. So I'm really glad that you've mentioned that. So coming back to the definition of a market, it sounds a bit complicated. I suppose it's that we're defining a niche market, I suppose, as a set of keywords with an intent is another way of putting it. And you were mentioning market share of your competition. That's also very important. Do you have a sort of rough rules of thumb for when you would stay out of a market or go in? I mean, do you have like, you know, how would you define too competitive, for example?
Yeah, I think, you know, we have, if I'm just talking specifically about the keywords on Fired Tool and the way that I generally look at it once the results populate the page, when I'm starting to look at interesting niches, because what's interesting about the tool is you can put in a generic phrase like, gardening tools, you know, and what you'll see from those results is a bunch of different keyword phrases and different product ideas. And I use that a lot for my product research. So literally within a couple of minutes, I can identify a few product niches that are interesting to me. And usually what I do from a filter perspective is I would filter out any keywords that are under 2000 in search volume, under 2000 searches a month, because it's just the demand is absolutely not there. And then I usually balance that with an additional filter. So everything over 2,000 in monthly searches. And then I usually use a filter of anything under an average of probably around 400 reviews, you know, filtering out those massive ones that are ingrained and been in the space for a long time. And then I'll look at that keyword set and start to look at dollars from keywords and a couple of those pieces. So that's generally how I look at it. Another easy rule that I look at just when looking at page one is, you know, kind of looking at the $50 review mark and seeing what monthly volume they do. So those are some high level immediate filters that I use just to break it down and start to look at opportunity.
Thank you. That's great. Cause I know everyone's always asking those sorts of questions and so it's good to have some, again, they're rough rules of thumb, but I think that's quite useful. So you filter out search volume under 2000. So now we haven't even talked about your background because these days I try and sort of give people value, but obviously you're mentioning sort of thing you look for. I understand that you also sell on Amazon and that your team are Amazon sellers themselves. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, I think every software company probably has a story where it's saying, hey, you know, we started selling on Amazon and I'm an Amazon seller. So I don't think that's that unique because I think that's what guided me to that opportunity. But I think, you know, if I give you a little bit of background there, essentially, you know, back in 2014, I was working in advertising and worked with a bunch of blue chip clients and stumbled upon the opportunity selling and creating brands on Amazon and just absolutely gravitated towards it and built up my own Amazon business, which got me out of the 9-to-5 advertising job. But, you know, myself, my co-founder, Adam Hudson, he was selling on Amazon. And in fact, our CTO who came in a little bit later sells on Amazon. And we absolutely believe in the concept of creating a scalable business on Amazon and seeing that as a massive opportunity for people to scale to financial wealth pretty quickly. And we're seeing that all of the time. So we believe in that concept and we foster it. So one of the things that we do within our business is we encourage every single employee within our company to have their own Amazon business because one, it obviously feeds into our software. But two, we just believe in it and think it's absolutely a thing that you can do as part of your day to day. So we encourage that and we provide zero interest loans to any employee who has got to the point of wanting to purchase stock. So you know, we stand behind it and it's just created this amazing culture where we have at least 50% of our workforce are actively involved in either starting or selling on Amazon. And so the understanding of the customer, the marketplace, what we need from Amazon, how to structure our tools is just at another level than if they didn't. So it's paying off in amazing ways.
Yeah, that's quite something. I have to say that being in a company where you could get a 0% loan to buy stock is pretty cool. So I imagine that you get your pick of developers as well from that point of view. It's an additional pretty major incentive. But also, as you say, I'm not sure how common that is to have 50% of your dev staff selling on Amazon. So that obviously helps keep you very close to the real needs, the day-to-day needs of Amazon sellers. So that's great.
Yeah. The other part of that is that they have a year to pay that loan back. But if their business fails, then they don't have to pay me back anything. So it's a pretty good deal.
That was one of the things that struck me. I thought, okay, so what if it doesn't work out? But that's a very sweet deal. I guess you guys are pretty incentivized to make sure that they get it to work as well. So I like it that you've really, that's quite an interesting, I think as far as I can know, it's a unique approach. I've not come across anyone tell me that. And I'm sure that given how competitive the software space in Amazon is, they would have told me within 5 seconds if that was the case. So I think that is a genuine differentiation point in terms of your sort of business culture. So it's a good amount of differentiation.
I think as much as you know this as well as I do, that I think that if you do use the data in the right approach and you then also use the training around differentiation and you treat this as a long-term business with proper business practices and not a quick win. And as long as you follow that as an approach, you know, the biggest obstacle is the emotional thing of just putting the money down and actually taking a step to launching the business. Because once you've got to that step and you've really followed the right approach, the potential for success of that business is actually pretty high in my opinion. And so, although I say, hey, you know what, you don't have to pay me back if your business fails, I think that the chance of it actually failing is pretty low. And we're seeing that already. I mean, people who are launching on our team are pretty successful with it. And, you know, but again, you have to follow the right approach.
Yeah, well, the fact that you're literally putting your money where your mouth is, or not literally, but metaphorically, is very strong, because I guess it shows you have faith in your employees' ability and the tool set that you're using. So, look, talking of differentiation, I think that differentiates you and your company from some of the other ones. What about differentiating the actual product? So you mentioned the data side, obviously very important to have good search demand, to have manageable competition. Before I get into differentiating the product, tell me about competition, because obviously demand is not everything. You mentioned market share. Is that something that you think is important? And what are the other competitive components that you would say you look at in a market?
Yeah, I think market share is an important piece. I don't think it's the most important, but I think in your assessment of a product, understanding your competitive suite and who are your competitors, and more importantly, how much of the revenue share are they actually getting? Is it 40-50% for the top three out of, you know, the 60 people on page one, or the top 25? That's an important piece to know, because it gives you some insights into, okay, especially when you balance that with your search volume as well, you know, are they just getting actual traffic from searches on Amazon, or potentially do those three competitors have an off of Amazon feed of you know, kind of like a funnel coming in, you know, which a lot of these businesses have. So I think understanding market share and whether you think you can get a piece of that is really important. From a competition perspective, I think we have a thing called a listing score, which really it's pretty detailed, but it looks at obviously how well that listing is optimized. Where are the main keywords based on what we're seeing? Where are they placed within that listing? Have they got EBC? Have they got good conversion percentages? You know, are they using all of the images? Do they have video? That kind of stuff. So really understanding how competitive that space is, I think is an important piece. And how ingrained is that niche that you're looking at? How long has it been around? I think these are all really important pieces that you need to look at before you decide to jump in there and start selling.
Okay. And that sounds like a lot of good common sense there. Tell me about conversion percentages. Is that something you guys can actually reverse engineer? Because I haven't come across that.
Yes, I think it is something that we look at in terms of, again, going back to the top three, we can look at click share, we can look at conversion percentages. And by getting data on the top three, we can also infer what are the other ones getting in terms of position and position on the page. So it isn't an outward metric that we completely display, because there are estimates that are going into, but it does play into all of the data that we look at for giving a competitive score for a listing. Yeah.
Because that really would be very important data, actually. So you don't sort of reveal the conversion rate to the outside world, as you think it's too approximate, but it is basically as part of the tool set based on the brand analytics data, from what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Part of that and a few other algorithms and metrics and things that we look at, you know, because we're tracking so many different things on Amazon that play into our algorithm that we then test against actual real results to give us inferences. And, you know, this is the game that we play, and you know, for knowing where you know Amazon is and where software is, it's a pretty complex industry with a lot of big data research algorithms. You know, this is a pretty sophisticated software space that we play in that has developed massively over 4 or 5 years, you know, so a lot of data that we have to look at. Yeah. But these are kind of things that we're looking at, and your ears pricked up when we said conversion percent. So, and all of my sellers, you know, who are building our platforms, that they also want that kind of data. So the closer we get to being able to release those kind of things, absolutely, we'll be doing that and a bunch more.
Great. I mean, yeah, that does sound good. I mean, it sounds like brand analytics data has been around for a few months now, for generally available to most people, or at least several months at this point. This is late 2019 we're talking, but it feels like people are only just beginning to exploit the full potential of what it can show you if you extrapolate from that data using data science, which it sounds like you guys are doing very, very well. Okay, so obviously
we want to... The other point on that is it's all one thing getting access to data, right, and using data science, whatever. But how do you actually display that to your customer is a really critical piece, and that's one thing that we really spend a lot of time working through is how do we visually showcase data through a business lens? Because the data that we show you have to be able to use it to make decisions on your Amazon business. And if you know you're just showing data for the sake of showing data and it's not that relevant, or accurate or timely, you know, that's a miss. And so we take that very seriously, so that whatever we display to you, you understand how to use it and how to, what kind of impact that's going to have on your decisions for your Amazon business.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. It's got to be data that is actionable in a business context rather than just numbers. Absolutely.
That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.